nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
George Hegel said, "We may affirm absolutely that nothing great in the world has ever been accomplished without passion." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are four guests who have tremendous passion. Our first playmaker was in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, but now buys and saves cool buildings in Oak Cliff, while two of our next three playmakers spent time in Indonesia, and all three are into flip-flops. With us today is the founder of a company that renovates and restores buildings in Dallas's largest remaining trolley-era shopping district. Well, our next three playmakers use their upscale casual footwear to help fight pediatric cancer. These great playmakers are David Spence. David is founder of Great Space, and Jeremy and Lila Stewart and John Veach, who are founders of Hari Mari. And we're going to begin today's show with Jeremy, Lila, and John. Hari Mari's roots are born out of a time spent living in Indonesia, where Lila and Jeremy Stewart worked on separate projects relating to improving kids' lives. Jeremy making a documentary film on children battling hunger and malnutrition in Southeast Asia. Lila volunteering with an orphanage outside of Jakarta. Returning to the States and soon thereafter expecting their daughter, they decided the next project they undertook would go to help kids in some capacity, and we're going to spend some time talking about that. Moving back to their hometown of Dallas, they saw an unmet need for colorful and comfortable flip-flops at the premium level, something different and unique from the sea of black and brown sandals that usually dominate retailers' walls while also preserving a timeless classic look. Partnering with childhood friend John Veach, the three married their passions for making flip-flops and helping children together, founding Hari Mari in 2012. Jeremy, Lila, John, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm great.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to have a nice full studio with everybody talking here today. So first question for you, how did living in Indonesia, improving kids' lives, and flip-flops all come together?
Well, it was a very roundabout way. It was not a direct path. My wife and I, as you said, were living in Indonesia at the time, and we were both working on projects related to helping kids. And born out of those experiences, we just found that that we thought there were not enough companies and brands doing things for kids, and specifically moving back to the U.S. after those experiences, we saw a lot of great brands and companies doing things for kids abroad. But we were wondering why more weren't doing things here in the U.S. So we did a little bit of research, and we found from that research that pediatric cancer was the most fatal disease among children in the U.S. And at the same time, we also were shopping for a pair of flip-flops in Dallas. And our favorite retailer, St. Bernard Sports, I'll give them a plug here, we were looking for those flip-flops, and all we saw were just iterations of black and brown. Saw no innovation. And in fact, the flip-flops that were available 4 years previous to us leaving the U.S. were the same that were available 4 years later.
And so no just, really a change in design, the exact same footwear.
The exact same footwear and the exact same colors, and something that was safe and you know, black and brown, of course, covered dirt and are somewhat pragmatic, but we wanted something with some character and some color and some pop, and we just didn't see it. And so when we arrived back, we decided to marry those two things together, making a great pair of more colorful and comfortable flip-flops together with helping kids and helping fight pediatric cancer. And that's how we came up with Hari Mari.
To add to that, when you do buy a pair of Hari Mari, and by the way, you can go to harimari.com, which is HARIMARI.com, which you'll see their website, and you see right at the very beginning it says that they give $3 for every pair purchased. So you are giving back no matter what happens, but you also have something along with this, and I was going to wait till a little later, but I'm thinking about it right now, is your Souls for Souls. Tell us about that. They're pointing at each other. Lila and John are letting Jeremy do most of the talking, but we're going to get Lila and John in here in a moment. So Souls for Souls.
They just know I like to froth at the mouth about flip-flops a little more than we probably should. Souls for Souls, it's a great organization based out of Nashville, Tennessee. We found ourselves wanting to help donate and give back where we could outside of pediatric cancer as well. And we saw a lot of cheaply made flip-flops being thrown away. And so we had a two-part problem. We had pairs that we wanted to donate ourselves because we make a lot of flip-flops. And we also had, we had other companies and brands and their flip-flops being thrown into landfills. And we thought, there might be a good opportunity here for asking customers of other brands to give us their worn out or their gently used flip-flops that they didn't want anymore in exchange for slipping them into a pair of Hari Maris. And so out of that was born an initiative we call our Zero Landfill Initiative, where we ask customers or potential customers to send us any pair, any brand of used flip-flops, and in return, we give them 15% off their next purchase on HariMari.com. And so in doing that, we were able to not only generate a lot of donations, a lot of flip-flop donations to us, but we're also able to pair those together with the flip-flops that we had and then donate those to Souls for Souls, which is an organization that then seeks out families abroad and that need footwear and slips them on their feet. So it was a kind of win-win for us.
So bottom line, Hari Mari is giving back, but let's talk about your actual product, your sandals, because you were talking about the fact there weren't that many upscale sandals that you were looking for. Tell us about how your product is made. There's a lot on the website, which again is HariMari.com, but tell us more about how your sandal is different from other sandals that are out there.
We did a significant amount of research and focus grouping before we launched Hari Mari, and we sat down with people of all ages and all walks of life and asked them what they did and didn't like about flip-flops. And part of that was we heard time and time again that if people didn't wear flip-flops, it was because they didn't like the toe piece. So a light went off, and we decided why not do something to combat that. So we have a patent-pending toe piece, and it's basically just a little bit of memory foam. So unlike a lot of other brands, there's no break-in period, and it's really comfortable from the get-go. But in addition to that, we really listened to what customers said they didn't like and wanted to incorporate that, not just the toe piece, but other aspects about the flip-flop into our product. So there's, while it looks like, just kind of a basic flip-flop and when you look at the product initially, but there's cupping, there's a little bit of a toe lift at the front to help prevent people from tripping on the front of it, and quite a few tweaks and made to the product to just kind of produce and put forward a more premium, comfortable flip-flop.
I also noticed from some of the information you sent, they're color-driven. Looking at the flip-flops you brought, it's not just that brown. You have a lot of blue in this one particularly. If you go to the website, you'll see lots of different colors of their flip-flops on the homepage. Or you have tan and navy, which I believe that's what you brought in today. They also have dark gray and mint. That's interesting looking. Neon pink and black. I'm guessing you have a lot of women that buy those. You have green and blue. So they've mashed a lot of colors together that look real good. But I also noticed on what you sent that they are boat friendly. How are they boat friendly?
Sure, we've got these 100% true rubber outsoles, which are non-marking and boat safe. So a lot of people in the aquatic world, outdoor enthusiasts alike, prefer to have a non-marking shoe that won't scuff the deck of a boat. So these kind of give you a bit of added traction, any sort of slick surface, and prevent you from slipping and sliding when you're walking around a pool as well. So, yeah, we pay a premium to use a premium material there on the outsole, but it pays off on the backside.
Well, you didn't. I didn't realize how big the global and U.S. sandal industry was. Tell us about how large and what the potential is in that industry.
Sure. When we were considering launching this brand, we knew it couldn't be a passion project wholly. Although that's how it started, we knew there had to be a fiscal and economic reality at some point, and we needed to check ourselves to make sure that was going to be feasible to make a successful business out of this. So a little bit of research later, we found that that the global U.S. and sandal industry is a $20 billion a year industry. In U.S., it's $7 billion in gross revenues. And what we found was that the market share leader has 10% of that market share, both globally and in the U.S. And so it's a highly fragmented market, and it's one that allows for new entrants if you do it correctly, if you enter correctly. And so while it seems like there's not a high barrier to entry, There's actually quite a lot that goes into it. And as Lila said, we focus group market researched. We put polls into all of our friends and family members, anyone who would give us feedback on their flip-flop and sandal experiences. And then we collected all that data. And we did about 2 years of R&D, buying all of our favorite brands of flip-flops, melding together swatches of material, different fabrics, different rubbers, and EVA foams. And really what we found was that what we wanted to see in terms of flip-flops, the flip-flops we wanted to buy just weren't available. And so there was a part of it that was passion-driven, and there was a part of it that was, this has to be a physical business, a physically sound business, and we feel that there's certainly that opportunity for a new entrant in the market. And beyond that, the really interesting thing about this business that we found since is that all of the other brands are either located in California or in South America. And so we're the only Texas-based flip-flop company that's really serving an audience that's you know, based in Texas and Middle America, and where we find the bulk of flip-flop wearers to be. And so you have this huge trend towards casual, both in America's workplace and Americans' personal lives. And we thought that, you know, while there are a lot of great brands that are doing great things on the coast, why not create something here? So that's how we really started from that end.
Well, you're talking about the upscale and the way it's made. As I've gotten older, I've noticed from talking to my podiatrist that what we wear on our feet has a lot to do with our support, our back, you know, how we feel. And looking at these sandals, it looks like there's a lot of support as compared to buying, I don't know what sandals, cheap sandals cost $5, $10, $15, not giving you the support. So apparently you took a lot of, you look at that to give the support for people who are buying your sandals or your flip-flops.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a key part of it. And so the aesthetics are one thing, but the comfort and just the support level that flip-flops offer are another. And a lot of people complain that podiatrists included, that flip-flops aren't good for your feet. But you know, we would say that if you make a flip-flop correctly, and if you have arch support, and if you have heel support, and if you make it out of really quality materials, that there's certainly an opportunity to create a comfortable footwear option that also treats your feet rather well versus injuring you for the long term. So we feel we've done that with this flip-flop.
That's it's a tremendous business. Thank you to Jeremy, Lila, and John. And again, how do our listeners get a hold of you and your business?
We are available in about 270 stores in 38 states here locally in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. You can find us at a range of stores from Luke's Locker to St. Bernard Sports to Tyler's. Those are some of our key brick-and-mortar accounts. But you can always go online at harimari.com, and that's our online store.
Thank you very much for being a part of us. Again, Harimari, HARIMARI.com. Stay with us. We have more. We're going to have a gentleman by the name of David Spence. He's been working in Oak Cliff, specifically the Bishop Arts District, and he's going to talk about what he's done with Good Space when we come back right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple, to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at wokc.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. With this segment, we're going to continue in the same theme of basically helping. We're going to talk to David Spence. David came to Dallas as a young attorney in 1992 to work in nonprofit community development. Assigned to an entrepreneurship program in West Dallas, David with his wife Cindy bought and renovated a bungalow in Oak Cliff. In 1995, 3 years later, David formed Good Space, this time choosing a for-profit real estate company as a vehicle for community development. Good Space purchases, restores, and operates early 20th century properties, all of them in and around the historic Bishop Arts District. David, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's an interesting story. My first question to you is, how does a former Peace Corps volunteer and an attorney with an MBA move to a city that his wife didn't want to live in and help turn around the Bishop Arts District?
Well, the first thing is the absence of a plan.
It happens.
It happens. It's funny. In Peace Corps, it was brought to my attention what I was good at. I was in a field, a program, as they call it, called appropriate technology, which is basically making household appliances out of mud and tin. And I was good at it. I was resourceful in that sense. But I failed to learn that lesson and instead went to law and business school. I was in law and business school generally with the aim of trying to make the world a better place. Peace Corps, having an experience, as Lila can tell you, will in the third world will do that to you. And so while I was in North Carolina, I came under the spell of a nonprofit there called the Center for Community Self-Help, which is run by a fella, Martin Eakes, who has since won a MacArthur Genius Award. And he suggested I go to law school as well as business school. So I said, okay, I had nothing else going on. And then I unexpectedly got homesick for Texas. I am not a native Texan, but I spent my junior high and high school years here. And so I got homesick for Texas, asked my wife if we could come back here. Her only proviso was that we not move to Dallas. She's a Houstonite, Houstonian. And but that, of course, sealed our fate that the only job offer that would come was from Dallas. And once I got here and started working in nonprofit community development, I discovered after getting fired twice that I did not operate well in a nonprofit environment. I was not good with the politics. I was not good with the boards. And so I wound up in for-profit real estate.
But your for-profit real estate is taking something and redeveloping it. One of the comments I make to people, I'm originally from the Chicago area, is there's a lot of old things in Chicago. When you come down to Dallas, and in Dallas, they knock everything down as old and rebuild it as new. Mm-hmm. Well, you're in an area where there's a lot of older structures, and I believe it's the 1904 southbound trolley area, mm-hmm. era, and there's a lot of neat, cool buildings down there. So what are you doing? Are you finding these buildings and redeveloping them, reshaping them so it can be used for something else?
Well, let's go back to the absence of a plan.
Which happens again.
After I had trouble working for somebody else, I decided maybe I needed to work for myself, as my father and both grandfathers had done. And I got good advice. Initially, Good Space was going to be a nonprofit. But another urbanist and real estate developer named Bennett Miller gave me good advice. He said, if you think these neighborhoods are worth investing in, put your money where your mouth is. And so the way I wound up in Oak Cliff is Cindy and I had settled in Oak Cliff because it was in Southern Dallas. I had come to work for Southern Dallas Development Corporation. So we had wound up living, buying a home south of downtown, and you know, when you sign up for a creative writing class, the first thing the teacher will tell you is write about what you know. Even if you think your little suburban existence is boring, write about what you know. And so when I decided to go into real estate, the submarket that I knew in Dallas was Oak Cliff. I didn't really understand why nobody else was down there. There were good reasons. So that's how I wound up in Oak Cliff.
Well, sometimes it's good to be naive.
Sometimes it's good to be naive.
Not knowing. And you've stayed there.
Yes. Nietzsche said, understanding kills action.
There you go.
So I had no understanding, so I just barreled right along.
Well, the bumblebee cannot fly because the shape and wave of its body in relationship to the total wing area, but the bumblebee doesn't know that, so it goes ahead and flies anyway.
That's right.
Tell us about some of the projects you have in the Bishop's Arts District, because you've developed some commercial and residential projects. Let's kind of go with your beginning, kind of do it in chronological order.
Sure.
What have you worked with?
I had no idea what I was doing, but I had befriended a young architect and contractor, Trey Bartosz. Trey had put all of his life savings in a little apartment building on one corner, and the apartment building on the other corner had a demo permit and was full of drugs and gangs. And so he induced me to buy that one and then showed me how to renovate it. So my first few projects were residential in an area that you and I would now call Bishop Arts, but at that time it would have been considered the Kid Springs neighborhood, which is a 105-year-old neighborhood. And I did a few small, again, trolley-era apartment buildings, apartments that had been built on this old streetcar line. And my first building in the Bishop Arts District, which is now home to Lucia Restaurant and Dude Sweet Chocolate, that's how most people know the Bishop Arts Building, I bought from an aging sculptor. At that time, Bishop Arts was pretty much dominated by working artists. And this gentleman was retiring and going back to Spain. So I bought this building from him, and I discovered the joys of commercial leasing, chiefly being that when the toilet breaks, the tenant has to fix it, not the landlord. And so since that time, I have mostly invested in commercial projects. Because I started early and bought my first buildings so cheap, I'm too cheap to buy buildings right in the Bishop Arts District. So actually, my Good Spaces MO has been to buy kind of on the fringes of the district and expand the district along its margins. And that mostly means Davis Street. Davis Street used to be the old Route 80. It was the old Intercontinental Highway, Transcontinental Highway. And because it was a highway, a state highway, it was littered with old body shops and auto garages. And so a lot of my buildings are what they call adaptive reuses of old body shops. So see Bolsa Restaurant. Bolsa Restaurant is in the old Settles Garage.
When you take a look at the history of Dallas, you see a tremendous amount of history in the Oak Cliff area. Mm-hmm. That was, if not the first, one of the first suburbs of Dallas, mm-hmm. and as everything moved north, everything went to hell in a handbasket in Oak Cliff. It wasn't mm-hmm. developed, and you came in there too. But you mentioned garages, the Settles and Kemp garages you purchased. What have you done with those?
Settles Garage has become a mixed-use building, but has offices upstairs and Bolsa Restaurant on the first floor. Kemp Garage, bought from Billy and Pappy Kemp, has become Bolsa Mercado. It's become a little coffee shop and gourmet grocer.
Well, you're around the Bishop Arts District. When you look at a property, when you look at a building, what do you look for? What do you see that you know is going to cause you to be able to turn that into a building that someone would like to lease, buy, or rent?
The Bishop Arts District just won an award from Preservation Dallas. But during the award ceremony, it was conceded that there's nothing really architecturally significant about the Bishop Arts District. None of the buildings down there are architectural treasures. They're all just little workaday buildings like they used to build in 1910. The difference is that the scale is smaller, the sidewalks are wider, the streets are narrower, and so you find a scale, kind of a human scale, pedestrian-scaled building that you don't see up north. I remember an old cartoon where a centenarian is being interviewed, like me right now, and the reporter asked him, "To what do you owe your long life?" And he said, "To the fact that I haven't died yet." And Oak Cliff, there's actually all of the charming little buildings that you're talking about. They used to exist throughout what we would now call near North Dallas, but they've all been torn down. And Oak Cliff's saving grace, as it turns out, is that because of the Ornery Trinity River, development went north, and so all the demolition occurred north, and places like the Bishop Arts District went into deep freeze, and so are there to be restored now.
They saved them for you. By the way, David's website is goodspace.com. Well, knowing what you know about Bishop's Art District, how should local government then invest in the city?
It's a good question. Dallas has a City Hall has a well-deserved reputation for wanting to do big, grand projects, a la Victory Park and Trinity Corridor. And I can remember when I interviewed for a job after one of the times I got fired, I went to Minneapolis-St. Paul, and I was struck by how much those cities invest in their neighborhoods. Just the little neighborhood parks were in wonderful shape, and they were plentiful. The Bishop Arts District, the city spent $3.7 million redoing all of the infrastructure, just the right-of-way in there. No special subsidies, no facade easements, no declarations or anything. They simply just took care of the infrastructure, and the little district took it from there privately. And the lesson of the Bishop Arts District is we need to be thinking small. We need to make small, tidy investment in little pocket neighborhoods. So there is a tendency even now to keep enlarging the Bishop Arts District. And what we need to be doing, Bishop Arts District is already done. We need to be looking for the next Bishop Arts District.
Well, the area that we're talking about is 342 acres long North Bishop Avenue and West Davis Street. So what's the story of planned development for, I guess it's District number 830? Which is adopted a couple years ago?
Yes. I would assert that this corner of North Oak Cliff has the most progressive zoning in Dallas. It is called Planned Development District 830, has a great ring to it. And but it does crazy things like give you parking credits for bicycle racks. It encourages wider sidewalks, encourages outdoor patios. If you've got what the city calls a legacy building, which is nothing more than a cool old building, if you put retail in there, your parking requirements are zero. And parking requirements, the suburban standards for development that were developed in Dallas after World War II, are the enemies of old buildings and old neighborhoods. And so PD 830 is our best example of loosening those regulatory strictures and letting these old neighborhoods breathe on their own terms.
Hate to cut you off. We're running out of time. This interesting discussion talking about that area. Again, you can check David's website, which is goodspace.com. David, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve, and I was happy to be here with the Hari Mari group.
Thanks. And glad to have you here with them, too. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. We're going to be back again next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, PlaymakersTalkShow.com.